Thanks for listening to the Wellspring Church Podcast.
So glad that you're here. My name is April Colquitt. If you are joining us for the first time today, or maybe you've been joining us for the last few weeks for this series, let me be very clear and make sure that we all know I am not the lead pastor of this church. Our lead pastor is Trey Kelly, and I am our children's pastor. And I have had the privilege of walking us through this series over the last couple of weeks, and today we're wrapping up a series. If you are with us for the first time today, I want to let you know right off the top that this is a series about loss and grief. And so I want you to think with me for just a minute about a lake. Think about when you have seen a lake that is perfectly still, like it looks like glass. When I see a lake like that, I want to be able to just sit and enjoy it and just appreciate the beauty of it. Some people want to pick up a rock and throw it into the middle of the lake. My husband would be one of those people, probably my son too. But if you were to pick up a rock and throw it into perfectly still water, it will make an impact. It will make a splash. And that impact on top of the water will create a ripple effect that goes across the lake. Loss is sort of like that. When there has been a loss of some kind or someone has experienced a disappointment, it's like it has impacted a small group of people. There's a small cluster of people that are directly impacted by that loss, just like a rock hitting the surface of the water. But then there are other people around that point of impact, and they feel the ripples of that loss. And if you've ever been in the ripples of someone else's loss, you know that it can be confusing. It can be difficult to know what to do. And so what we have been learning in this series is that our culture doesn't really respond well or handle grief very well. And because of that, when we are in the ripples of someone else's loss, when we are around a person of direct impact of some sort, it can be difficult for us to know how to respond to that. Oftentimes, the message that is communicated is something along the lines of, everything's going to be okay. Get back out there and stay strong. Sometimes the message that's communicated is, it's time to move on. Sometimes the message is that it's absolutely okay for that person to hurt and be sad, but just try not to be too sad around certain places like at work or around the kids. And what we have been trying to understand is that none of those messages reflect the heart of Jesus. There's actually a better way, according to Jesus, for us to approach grief. So if you haven't been here or if you haven't had a chance to watch Aftermath online at all, I want you to go back and listen to weeks 1 and 2 of this series, because this is one of those series where we try to tell you that the content of every week is very important in understanding the whole concept of what we're talking about. The weeks sort of build on each other, and it'll be the most helpful when you've heard the whole series from top to bottom. But one of the things that we've been learning is that grief isn't just about the loss of life. There are many different things that cause us to grieve. Here is how we have been defining grief: the feelings of disappointment or pain that stem from something that no longer exists. So grief could be the loss of a job or a relationship. Grief may stem from the loss of your health or independence through age or a disability or an illness. There may be grief over a loss of property or finances. We may grieve even when we have had to let go of a dream or some goals that we set for ourselves. Anything that once was and no longer is can lead us to feelings of pain and disappointment, and that's grief. Anything can cause us to grieve, and this is why I believe this topic, this subject that we have been learning about, is so important for every single one of us. Because at some point, we will all experience a disappointment or a loss to some degree of some magnitude. We don't know when, we don't know what it's going to be. But part of our conversation last week was that God lets us know ahead of time that we will experience trouble in this world. Jesus said, in this world, you will find trouble. And God does not cause bad things to happen. When we experience a disappointment or a loss, that is the result of a broken world that we live in because of sin. And sin absolutely breaks God's heart, but he is still good. In fact, he is so good that he gives us a warning that we will experience difficulty. We will know trials and hard times. And I don't know about you, but I appreciate knowing ahead of time. I like to be able to prepare. And so I believe it's kind for Jesus to tell us that we're going to experience trouble because it keeps us from being blindsided when we're disappointed. Being prepared doesn't mean that we will be able to avoid all of the pain. It doesn't mean that we will not experience any of it. We absolutely will. But what we tried to understand last week in week two is we can prevent some pain in the future by preparing in the present. We cannot avoid the storm completely, but there are some things that we can do to be prepared for the aftermath of grief, just like we would prepare for the aftermath of a hurricane. There are some things we can do now to help us experience a little bit less pain. Some of the things that we talked about are having a firm foundation, knowing Jesus and putting our faith and our hope in Jesus Christ so that when we find ourselves in the middle of a difficult season of life, when we are walking through a storm, we know him and we know his promises. We talked about the importance of recognizing some of the side effects of grief so that when we are walking through that, we can know when we are being triggered by trauma and stress, and it will help us know how to manage those feelings and those experiences, not only for ourselves, but can help us recognize and be able to respond to those things in other people. But one of the most important ways that we can prepare for the aftermath of grief is to be in community. This is where we left off our conversation last week, by trying to understand that we should never attempt to walk through difficult seasons of loss and disappointment on our own. Jesus has designed us. God has created our bodies to respond to all different types of loss and pain through a series of physiological processes and systems in our body. One of the ways that we respond to physical and emotional pain is through crying. We talked about that in week one. When we cry, it's a visible signal to other people that we're not okay, that something is wrong. God has not designed us to walk through grief alone. He has created our bodies to respond to pain, but he has not designed us to go through that alone. As a matter of fact, God actually calls us to help each other in a time of sorrow, in a time of loss and disappointment. One of the people who we talk about here at Wellspring a lot is Paul. If you come to Wellspring often, you've heard of Paul. Paul was a leader and teacher in the early church. He helped new Christians know how to follow Jesus. And something else that Paul did was he helped communities of faith understand what some of their roles and responsibilities were as Christ followers. And so in Paul's letter to the church in Galatia, he begins to talk to them about some of their responsibilities and how they can be a good community of faith for one another. And one of the first things that Paul tells that church and us is to share each other's burdens. If you have ever been in a season of loss, if you've ever walked through some type of disappointment, you know that it is a burden. Grief is a burden. It interrupts and interferes with our life in ways that are emotional, physical, mental, even spiritual disruption because of grief and that type of burden when we have experienced a profound loss. And Paul says that when we share those types of burdens, that we are actually following Jesus. He tells them, share each other's burdens and in this way, obey the law of Christ. When he says the law of Christ, Paul is talking about Jesus' command to love your neighbor as yourself. In the Gospel of Matthew, Jesus said the greatest commandment is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind. And the second is equally important. and that is to love your neighbor as yourself. So Paul says that when we share each other's burdens, for example, the burden of grief, because grief is a burden, when we share those with each other, we are not only following our calling, we're following the commandment to love each other as Jesus has commanded us to do. But how exactly do we share the burden of grief? That's what I want us to spend the next few minutes talking about, is how we can share that burden of grief. And it's a very challenging thing to do, or we think it's a challenging thing to do. But the most challenging part about it goes back to something that we talked about last week. It's something we said last week, and it is that grief is awkward. Grief is very awkward. There are lots of awkward things that we do, like first kisses and job interviews. If you ever walk into a room and everybody immediately stops talking when you walk in, that's awkward. Halloween on a Sunday is a little bit awkward. Week 3 of a grief series on Halloween on Sunday is even more awkward. But we're doing that. Awkward things are a part of our life, and we can do awkward things. But grief is awkward in a little bit different way, because it triggers emotions and feelings and memories in us that can be painful and uncomfortable. And we don't want to be uncomfortable, and we don't want to make other people feel uncomfortable either. And so what we have a tendency to do is to just avoid thinking about things happening that are not pleasant to ourselves or to other people. And when we avoid thinking about them, we also avoid learning about them. But for the last few weeks, we've been learning a lot about grief. We've been stepping into the awkwardness of grief and just doing it. We've been learning about it. And I believe that when we learn better, we can do better. One of the most awkward things about grief is that we just don't know what to do with it. But you know what we do well? We show up with casseroles. At least that is what we do in the South. I don't know about other parts of the country, wherever you're watching this from or wherever you grew up, but where I am from, when someone is hurting or they're going through a difficult time, we show up with food. You got bad news today? I'm bringing dinner over tonight. Someone's having surgery? We will put together a meal train for you. You lost your job? We are coming over with food. Someone passed away? We'll call the caterer and have them set up at your place, which is something that I do not understand, by the way. Am I the only one who thinks that is weird, that we expect a person who has just lost a loved one to entertain and throw a party at their place? I feel like we should start a petition in the lobby today to change that tradition, but maybe that's just me. Since you're laughing, I think you're on the same page with me. Maybe we'll change that. But grief is awkward, and so we just show up with food, and it's very helpful. I have been in some of those situations, and I know that when you get 10 lasagnas, it's a blessing, because it takes the thinking out of something that we all have to do at least 3 times a day, especially if we have other people in our home. It is a huge blessing. So don't hear me saying that it's not. But some of the people that I have talked to have said that grief is the most awkward after the casseroles. It's when the food is gone that it gets the worst, because the triage team has dissipated and the person who has experienced that direct impact is still in acute pain. And so it's awkward. And when it is, we respond in a few different ways. There's some typical ways that we have a tendency to respond when we are in the ripples of someone else's loss. One of the things that we do is we just try to act normal. Just be cool. Act natural. Maybe if we act natural and normal, then the person who's experienced the loss will be able to act normal too. We just pretend that everything is okay, even though we all know it's not. Something else that we do is we say things. We just say all kinds of things. Whatever comes to our mind, we may not even really give it a lot of thought, just whatever happens to come out. Sometimes we search for something positive to say, like, it was probably for the best. It was probably for the best. Sometimes these things happen. Stay strong. We search for something positive to say. Sometimes we search for something spiritual to say, like, all things happen for a reason, or we just have to trust God's timing. This is going to make you a stronger person in the end. I know it will. Sometimes we say things to try to feel what they're feeling, you know, to relate to them. We'll say things like, I know exactly what you're going through. I've been there before. I know exactly how you feel. And let me just be very honest that I have said some of these things, maybe to some of you. And you've probably said some of those things too. And because I have said some of those things, I know that the heart behind it is good. Our intention when we say those things is good. The problem is that we cannot expect a person in pain to interpret our intentions. And what happens is sometimes what we say, meaning to be helpful, actually comes across as hurtful. That's what I have been learning, is that sometimes we mean and intend to be helpful, but it comes across as hurtful. And I've learned that some of the things that we say actually are dismissive, making the person feel wrong or guilty for feeling sad about their circumstance. It can make them feel like the relationship that they lost didn't really matter. And because of that, for that very reason, some people, in an effort to not say or do the wrong thing, we just do nothing. And I've fallen into this camp before too. It feels safer to just do nothing. I don't feel like I can really do anything to help. I assume if you need something or you want to talk about it, you're going to let me know. And so it's safer to just back up completely and keep my distance and wait. But when we do that, we create a gap between us and that person and whatever it is that has happened. And when we do nothing, they are the ones who are left to fill that gap. And oftentimes what they will do is they will assume, well, that person just didn't really care that much about me, or they may feel like that whatever they have experienced, whatever they're walking through, wasn't really all that significant. And so when we do nothing, it can be just as hurtful as when we try to do something. Ultimately, when we are in the ripples of someone else's loss, someone else's direct impact, a disappointment, we really just want to help. We just want to make it better. What we really want to do is to fix it. But do you know Paul does not say that by fixing the burden, we obey the law of love? He simply says that by sharing the burden, we obey the law of love. We actually cannot fix someone's grief. It's one of those things that when it happens to us, we have to walk through it. But all we are really called to do is to share the burden. When grief is awkward, we can just simply be a friend, not a fixer. It doesn't have to be complicated. All we are called to do is be a friend, not a fixer. There's a story in the Old Testament that I believe illustrates for us how to be a friend in a time of grief, and I wanted us to look at it together today. It starts in the book of Ruth, and Ruth is one of the main characters of the book. Obviously, it's named after her, but it begins with a woman named Naomi. Naomi was a wife and a mother. She had two sons, and they lived in Bethlehem. And at the time, there was a famine sweeping across the region. And so the food became so scarce in Bethlehem that Naomi and her family decided to relocate to a place called Moab, which was on the other side of the Dead Sea. And after they had traveled to Moab, it wasn't long before Ruth's husband passes away. And so her two sons continued to look after her and care for her. They got married. But then in just 10 years' time, both of Naomi's sons also passed away. And so Naomi was left with no immediate family except for her two daughters-in-law who were named Ruth and Orpah. And after a little bit of time, the famine has also moved to Moab. And so Naomi's world is shattered. She has lost a husband. She has lost two sons. She's living through a time of famine where there's no food. And so her world is falling apart. And one day she decides that they're going to move back to Bethlehem because they've gotten word that there's food there again. And so she packs up with Ruth and Orpah, and they start making their way back to Naomi's hometown of Bethlehem. But while they're on their journey, something kind of unexpected happens. Naomi suddenly decides that Ruth and Orpah should not come with her to Bethlehem. Maybe on the day that they left Moab, she was having a good day with her grief. But on this day, in this moment, Naomi has decided Ruth and Orpah should not come with her. She tries to convince them to go back to Moab because that's where their families are. And if they want to have any hope of remarrying and having children, they should just go back. And they don't want to. But she tries to convince them, just go home. I have nothing to offer you. I cannot take care of you. Go back to your families. Maybe you've walked with someone through a period of grief who does that. They start to put a bubble around themselves and shut people out, and they begin to isolate. That's what Naomi is doing. And Orpah listens. She reluctantly, tearfully turns around and goes back to her family. But Ruth refuses to go home. She actually digs her heels in and says, I'm not going anywhere. What Ruth is doing is she's listening to Naomi. She's not just hearing the words coming out of her mouth, but she's paying attention to what Naomi really needs and wants, which is not to be alone. And so that's where we pick up this story. Ruth says, don't urge me to leave or turn back from you. Where you go, I will go. Where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God. Ruth is like, you are not getting rid of me that easily. I'm sticking with you no matter what. And so Naomi finally gives in, and they continue going to Bethlehem. And just because Ruth stayed with Naomi did not mean that she got over her grief. It was a painful journey full of grief. And when they got there, Naomi was still in so much pain that the people there didn't even recognize her. Do you know grief will do that to people? Deep, profound loss will cause a change in us. And so Naomi doesn't even look the same. She doesn't sound the same. In fact, she doesn't even feel like the same person. Here's what she says. She says, don't call me Naomi, she told them. Call me Mara, because the Almighty has made my life very bitter. She is not the same person. Grief changes us. And at this time, names meant a lot. It sort of described who the person was. So Naomi means pleasant. Naomi's like, I am not pleasant anymore. That's not who I am now. She chooses a name for herself that will reflect how she's really feeling. She chooses the name Mara, which means bitterness. Do you ever know somebody that grief really changes who they are? They're not the same person anymore. It affects us mentally, physically, emotionally. It can even have an impact on us spiritually. And that's where Naomi is right now. She is feeling different. She says, I went away full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why call me Naomi? The Lord has afflicted me. The Almighty has brought misfortune upon me. Now, Naomi never turns away from God, but it is clear that she is struggling and wrestling with the Lord. I think it's safe to say that she's maybe even depressed. She is not the same person that Ruth knew when she met her. When Ruth met her, Naomi was a different person. And now she's this person. But Ruth does not leave her. As you read through the book of Ruth, it's clear that she did everything she could to stay strong for Naomi, to take care of her. They developed a deep bond. And Ruth later got married and had a child, and she named him Obed. And that was such a blessing to Naomi that other people recognized what a blessing it was. They said, praise the Lord who has now provided a redeemer for your family. May this child be famous in Israel. May he restore your youth and care for you in your old age, for he is the son of your daughter-in-law who loves you and has been better to you than seven sons. Naomi found some hope, some joy through this new baby. Her and Ruth were so close that this child that Ruth had became like a grandson to Naomi, and that brought her some joy. But this happy ending did not discount the pain that Naomi had already experienced. What it does do is point to the promise of hope and joy that can be found after a loss. Ruth helped Naomi find love again and to be able to experience new life again. That was because of God using Ruth through her friendship. Ruth played the biggest role in Naomi's recovery, in Naomi's walking through all of that pain and loss. It was because of Ruth. You might be wondering, did we skip the part where Ruth did something really remarkable or said something profound that helped Naomi turn a corner? We didn't. That's actually the most important part of the whole story. It's what Ruth didn't do for Naomi. She did not try to fix the way that Naomi felt. She did not talk to Naomi and stage an intervention or speak Bible verses into her. Ruth did not post hashtag pray for Naomi on social media. She just stayed with her. She stuck by her and did life with her day in and day out on the hard days, the good days, the darkest days. She was a faithful friend and was patient with Naomi through all of the pain. It's similar to the way that Jesus responded to Mary and Martha in the story that we looked at in week one, where Lazarus had died and Jesus just grieves with Mary and Martha. There is never any expectation for them to feel any different than the way they were that day in that moment. That's similar to how Ruth cared for and loved Naomi. She was just there. I believe that this story can help illustrate for us how we can share the burden of grief. Everything that we've been learning up to this point, we've learned a lot about how grief is awkward and what it does to our bodies and how our culture responds. But looking at all of the things that we've learned, looking at this story and about what Paul says about how we share the burden of grief, I want us to talk about some practical ways that we can do that. Maybe we haven't always responded the best way in the past. Maybe we've said or done some things that weren't perfect. But now that we know better, we can do better. So one of the first things that we can do to share the burden of grief is step into the awkwardness. Be the one to make the first move towards the awkwardness of grief. Do you know people who have experienced a profound loss often report feeling like they are naked or exposed the first time they walk back into public, when they show up at work for the first time after that, or when they come to church for the first time after that, or even just walking into the grocery store? It's like everybody knows about this thing that has happened to them, whatever it is. And so what's going through their mind is things like, do they know? How much do they know? Are they gonna bring it up, or am I gonna have to? Do they think it was my fault? When they're thinking things like that, we can alleviate some of the burden of their grief by stepping into that awkward moment for them and just owning it. We can handle awkward things. We do it all the time. And I know we don't want to feel uncomfortable and we don't want to make them uncomfortable, but a person who is in pain should not be expected to have to make a decision about what to say and when to say it and who to say it to. We can do that for them by stepping into that moment and closing the gap. Something else that we can do is to listen to how they feel. Listen to how they feel. Really listen. That is what Ruth did for Naomi. She really listened, not just to what she was saying, but also to how she was feeling. Sometimes listening is difficult, though, because it will mean silence. And silence is also uncomfortable and a little bit awkward. And so when there's an awkward silence, what do? We start talking. We start saying things. We try to give advice, or we start talking about our experience with loss. But one thing that we all know about grief is that we all grieve differently. My experience with grief will look and feel different than your experience of grief, even if it's a very similar situation. No matter how well I think I know you and know about what you've been through, it's not the same as what I've experienced, which is why it's so important for us to just listen. And I will add this. Sometimes we are in a situation ourselves where we're not really able to listen. Or maybe we don't have time when we pass that person in the hallway. And that's okay. It's not mean if you can't listen. What you can do is just say, hey, I'm thinking about you. I've been praying for you. You can just send a text. If you see them, just give them a hug. But if you are not able to really listen, do not ask the question, how are you doing? Because when you do, and your eyes start to glaze over while they're talking, they can tell, and that's hurtful. So it's better to just not ask the question at all until you're able to really listen, to really give them your time. And that's okay. Do what is genuine to you, and that is what is acceptable. Just listen. And then finally, we can share the burden of grief by letting go of expectations and just being patient. Let go of expectations. That means you don't expect them to return every text or to show up in all the same ways that they used to. Remember, grief can change people. They might not ever be able to do exactly what they used to do. They may not ever want to do the same things that they always did before. We have to be understanding of that. If you are the person who is grieving, you can also let go of expectations of yourself and know that it's okay. Give yourself some space and some grace. We learned last week that suffering requires slow. When we have been hurt, when we have experienced a direct impact of disappointment or loss, we will need time. Loss takes time. It takes space. It takes understanding, which is why we must be patient. We cannot expect them to hurry up and get over it. There is no formula, no magic system to processing our feelings of grief or to walking through a loss. We cannot know when someone is going to be better any more than they do. There will likely be good days and bad days. There will be happy moments and sad moments. There will be moments when their grief completely wipes them off their feet when they were least expecting it. We cannot know when someone is going to get better. That's why we have to be patient. We have to be understanding and to let go of expectations and keep showing up on day 365 like we did on day 3. Especially on the hard days too. Especially on the holidays and the birthdays and the would-have-been anniversaries. Let go of expectations and just be patient. These are some of the ways that we can share the awkwardness of grief. And when it is awkward, we have to remember that we are not called to be a fixer. We just have to be a friend. Just be a friend. The way that Jesus was to Mary and Martha, the way that Ruth was to Naomi, simply letting go of some of those expectations and meeting people right where they are with no expectation to hurry up and get over it, not expecting them to have a better outlook, but to just let them feel things rather than trying to fix everything for them. We cannot fix it, but we can share it by showing up, by being a faithful and patient friend. You know, when we are grieving, Jesus grieves with us. We are never alone. But God has so kindly given us this. God has so kindly put people in our lives to help us walk through painful circumstances. He has given us each other. He has given us the gift of his church, of a community of believers, and we are called to share that with one another so that we never have to walk through it alone. We walk through it with Jesus, and we walk through it with other people. We need people when we are grieving, when we are hurting. And when we know better, like we do now, we can do better. Just be a friend. As I have prepared for this series, I've shared with you that I had the opportunity to sit down with a lot of people and hear their stories. And I had the privilege of sitting down with this one couple who shared some things that I think can be really helpful to all of us as we are learning how to be friends when we are in the ripple of someone else's loss. And so they were so kind to be vulnerable and to share their story with you and some of their experiences. And I want you to watch this video this morning and just listen to their heart as you start to think through how you can share the burden of other people's grief. This was a difficult thing for them to do, and I'm so grateful that they were willing to share this with you. Watch this.
Hi, my name is Cindy McGee, and this is my husband, Dave. And on Friday, May 22nd of 2020, Memorial Day weekend, our lives changed forever. We lost our oldest daughter, Kelsey, at the age of 19 in a car accident. The people that have helped us feel most loved and seen over the past almost 17 months have been the friends that are closest to us, particularly our friends that are people that love the Lord and was able to come alongside of us and just begin the journey with us.
A lot of them understood, not what we were going through, but understood to be patient and to realize that you don't know what mood we're going to be in that day or what's going on in our mind that day. And listening to us, and we're not even listening to us, just sitting and being quiet and just be there.
It doesn't take words to have an impact. You know, sometimes it's just the presence of someone being there that can make a difference.
What do you need? It's a hard question to answer because truly don't know what we need in that moment in time. The people that came to us at the house at that time just understood that I got to step up. This is what they need. This is what you're going to get. I couldn't give them direction on what I needed. The yard would get mowed for us. Dinners were being prepared for us. Laundry was getting done. It was all just being done patiently.
One of the things that people have done that has surprised me is being afraid to mention Kelsey's name or not sure if it would be appropriate, making it awkward for others. And for our experience, it's less awkward to just go ahead and let's talk about it. Let's mention her name and let's honor her memory well.
We don't mind talking about it. We love talking about Kelsey. Not many 19-year-olds did what she did in 19 years. So we're very proud of Kelsey. I mean, it's a loss of a relationship. It's a loss of finances. It's a loss of a child. It's a loss of a wife, a mother. They're all a loss, but to compare your story to someone else's stories can be hurtful in the way that could affect that person and understanding what you're saying. Because in that moment of time when you're grieving and you're in shock, you're really kind of not listening, but you are listening, and you pick up things that might be wrong or might be right in their mind, but you're taking it the wrong way because you can't even tell people what you need or how you're feeling.
I wish people knew how to be there for each other when your hurting is not as difficult of a task as what you would think. It's the little, smallest gestures that can make the biggest impact. It's the random text message of encouragement, the random text message of scripture, or I saw this today and it made me think of you. A few things that have helped us find some peace and joy during this journey has been our involvement with Habitat for Humanity. Kelsey was really involved in Habitat, and we've been able to continue that in her memory.
Kelsey always loved Habitat. Habitat came to us, and now the golf tournament is Kelsey McGee Memorial Golf Tournament every year. So I'm now a board member of Habitat in Kelsey's name, and we'll continue that honor on for Kelsey as long as I can.
Kelsey was an organ and tissue donor, so it does bring me joy to know that she was able to give the gift of life to others, and part of her does live on. I think, you know, as we experience different things in life, then, you know, God equips us to be able to use those experiences to pour into other people, be able to use those and just try to keep pointing, you know, everything in a direction towards God's glory. Because from the beginning, that's been my prayer is, okay, God, we have to do this and we have to walk through this, but help me find some type of joy in it. And more than anything, let me use this for your glory.